Hi, everyone. Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to the Washington Weekly Podcast on the UBS In The Now podcast channel. Joining us once again for the conversation, glad to welcome back on this Friday morning, Shane Lieberman, Senior Governmental Affairs Advisor with Governmental Affairs U.S. here at UBS. Shane, thank you as always for dropping by, spending some time with our listeners, our clients. Looking forward to our conversation.
Yeah, thank you, Dan. It's good to be back with you.
So, Shane, a few topics we want to cover on the podcast for this week. Perhaps we could begin with geopolitics. I do want to check in on the Israel-Hamas war, which we have covered many times here on the podcast in recent months. I bring it up because I did see reports that Secretary of State Blinken is visiting Israel this week as tensions between the U.S. and Israeli administrations, they do appear to be mounting, all while a new Israeli offensive is taking shape. So, since we last spoke about this topic, how has the war evolved in recent weeks, and what would you characterize as being the current stance of the Biden administration on the war?
Yeah, thank you. This is multifaceted. There's a lot going on here, obviously, you know, and you're correct. You're seeing some division lines between President Biden and Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu. You know, I think to start with Secretary Blinken, you're right. He is in the region. He was in Egypt, and this morning he met with Netanyahu and the War Cabinet. You know, starting to really push even harder for a ceasefire and Israel to accept a ceasefire. You're having CIA Director Burns in Doha at the same time trying to negotiate such a ceasefire. Which would include, you know, the release of the over 100 Israeli hostages still held in Gaza. You know, at the same time, Israel is preparing for an offensive in Rafah, and that is, I don't want to characterize it as a red line for the Biden administration, but it is something that they're pushing very hard against. They're very concerned about what that would do to Palestinians on the humanitarian level in Gaza. You know, and at the same time, you have the U.S. who in the U.N. called for a ceasefire with the exchange of hostages. Russia, China rejected this at the Security Council. But this is also kind of a new venture for the U.S. to really push for a ceasefire at the U.N., which is currently opposed ceasefires. And, you know, to the U.S.'s point, you know, the other ceasefires really were unconditional and did not call for the release of all these hostages. So that is, you know, providing some of the tension, further tension between Netanyahu and President Biden. At the same time, you're seeing Republicans in Washington, D.C. See this as you know, a fray, and they have invited Prime Minister Netanyahu to address Congress, and I think they're looking to kind of highlight Prime Minister Netanyahu and Israel's struggle to get their hostages back and, you know, finally rid the world of Hamas and the terrorists of Hamas. So, you know, you're seeing a political divide in Washington play into this as well.
Well, Shane, it is indeed a very complicated situation. So thank you for bringing our listeners up to speed on where this stands as of today and what the political dynamics look like. And certainly we'll continue to keep our listeners informed on the war as it continues to take shape. I do want to come back stateside and focus on a couple of domestic topics. Last week, we briefly spoke about how for the presidential candidates, with respect to Democrats and the GOP, having pretty much at this point been decided, though the primaries continue. We did see this week primaries spanning Ohio to Illinois to Florida. On the congressional level, I'm curious, any notable takeaways from this week's round of primaries?
Well, before we get to the congressional level, I would still say the presidential primary vote is continuing in the states that you just mentioned, and still is providing some interesting information that we're paying attention to. You know, I'll use Florida and Arizona as examples. You know, in Arizona, Joe Biden got over 89% of the vote. So, you know, while he is uncontested, you still have some protest votes. right? On the flip side of that coin, former President Trump is uncontested as well, as there's no one left in the race, yet he received less than 80% of the vote. So there was almost double the protest vote for Trump than there was for Biden, which leads to a lot of, you know, questions about whose voters will come home at the end of the day. And in a state like Arizona, where the race is going to be very close, you know, Nikki Haley got over 100,000 votes. If those 100,000 people either stay home or vote Biden, that could sway the entire election. You know, I think Florida was interesting, too, that there was a significant protest vote as well in the Republican primary. Nikki Haley got over 155,000 votes. DeSantis got 41,000 votes. So, you know, this is worth noting. But to your kind of point, yes, there were also congressional races. You know, I think in Ohio, you saw Bernie Moreno prevail on the Republican side to challenge current Democrat Senator Sherrod Brown. And, he was one of the top three Republicans vying for the seat. He was backed by former President Trump. So a lot of people are kind of focusing on, you know, it's the Trump takeover of the Republican Party. I'd also note that, you know, Democrats actually were enthused for Bernie Moreno to be the Republican candidate, as they believe that it gives Senator Sherrod Brown the best chance to win re-election. So this is going to be an interesting one. And this could be, you know, the race that decides who controls the Senate. As we know, the Senate's going to be very close at the end of the day. And, you know, there's only a handful of states that may decide it. And Ohio may be one of those states. Further, one other race I'll note is a House race in Illinois, where current Republican Congressman Mike Bost, he narrowly was reelected in the Republican primary. He was actually supported by former President Trump, but he had a challenger who was supported by Congressman Matt Gaetz. And you may remember Matt Gaetz is one of the House Republicans that led the former Speaker Kevin McCarthy's ouster. So he's one of those rabble rousers, we'll say, and he has a following that he can easily excite. And, you know, it almost cost Congressman Bost his seat in a safe Republican seat. And this is interesting because, you know, you have Mike Bost, who's supported by President Trump. So kind of now what's becoming almost the establishment to some degree. But then on the far right, you know, the rabble rousers, putting their own people, trying to put their own people in place, even if President Trump supports the other person. So this is kind of a fascinating intra-party fight that is growing within the Republican Party.
Some very interesting takeaways as you broke down the congressional races, but also the presidential race as well. Some of those numbers are very interesting as you broke those down for us. Just sticking with Decision 2024, last week, Shane, you did mention the centrist group No Labels. Now, I did see this week reports that the group is finding the task of recruiting a candidate to be, quote, daunting. So what can we take away from that as the decision whether to launch a presidential run by No Labels is expected within weeks?
Yeah, no, that's correct. They have had a bunch of people say no, from former Congressman Liz Cheney to, governors like Chris Sununu. Former Governor Chris Christie has, I think, left the door open a little bit. But you're right. You're having a tough time finding a person to be at the top of the ticket. You know, they asked current Republican Governor Brian Kemp of Georgia, who is very conservative. And, you know, for him, my guess is his calculation came down to he will be a very strong candidate for president in 2028 on the Republican ticket. If he were to go down this route with No Labels, there is pretty much zero chance he would be able to do that. So this was kind of a long-term play in his book about his future in the Republican Party, his future as a potential leader. And I think, you know, someone who made a conscious decision to take the No Labels ticket, is essentially, you know, making a decision that, you know, their future long term is not in the Republican Party anymore. And, you know, Senator Bill Cassidy of Louisiana, he as well said no. On the Democrat side, you know, they're having a little bit tougher time because No Labels is looking for the top of the ticket to be a Republican and the vice presidential person to be a Democrat. So, you know, there are a lot of big name Democrats who, you know, may be interested, but they're not interested in being the vice presidential person on this ticket. They want to be the president, presidential nominee. So, you know, former Senator Manchin has said no as well, right? So, you know, I think, you know, maybe they'll find someone else. I think they're going to try and find someone who maybe they can appeal to that person's duty of service, you know, maybe someone who served in the military and try and appeal to that person's honor and character and say, you know, this is not about you, this is about the country. And that may be the person that they can get to agree to join the ticket if they do move ahead. And as you said, we expect a decision in the coming weeks.
Well, we shall see how this takes shape. It is, of course, interesting to hear about the background and some of the names being considered or in some cases tapped for No Labels. So we'll see how this plays out in the weeks ahead. Though, Shane, thank you for dropping by the Washington Weekly podcast on this Friday morning to bring our listeners up to speed on the range of topics we covered. Hope you have a nice weekend and do look forward to picking back up with the conversation in the week ahead.
Thank you, Dan. Best to you and hope you have a great weekend, too.
Thank you, Shane. Again, today we have been joined by Shane Lieberman, Senior Governmental Affairs Advisor with Governmental Affairs U.S. here at UBS. I, of course, want to point our listeners, our clients, to the latest Washington Weekly publication, which can now be located up on ubs.com/Washington Weekly. From UBS Studios, I'm Dan Cassidy. Thank you for joining us.
As a firm providing wealth management services to clients, UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreement and disclosures that we provide to you about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary or ask your UBS financial advisor for a copy.